Welcome to our first Q&A session of the third class on the Yoga Sutras. It's really lovely to see you all, and just enjoy your presence here on a Sunday morning. So let's just start with a very short meditation, and you can close your eyes. We're going to do what I call tantric vipassana, where we become aware, first of all, of the sounds around us. Really having the feeling that we're being held by the space around us. And then let your attention come into the body and feel the touch of the clothes on your skin. The sensations of your eyelids against each other. Any sensations that you can be aware of in your neck and shoulders. Your belly. And finally, the sensation of the breath flowing in and out of your nostrils, perhaps flowing up towards the soft palate. Your focus is on the touch of the breath, the caress of the breath. And be aware of thoughts. And finally, of the knowing, the awareness that lets you recognize that you're thinking. So we're briefly touching all these different aspects of our experience, the perception of what we hear, the perception of the sensations in our body, the sensation of breath, perhaps the sensations in your nasal passages and up to the soft palate. Awareness of thoughts. And finally, awareness of that part of your attention that can be present as awareness or as the knower of all this. And you can open your eyes. I have a couple of questions that Catherine in Germany sent to me. And I think I'll just answer them before we take questions from all of you guys who are here live. So she asked two questions. One, is it okay to drink coffee before meditation? And I think, how many of you drink coffee before or tea before meditation?
Me too.
So yes, I think it's fine. In fact, the Sufis famously drank coffee before meditation. And one of the reasons they did it is because they used to meditate in the middle of the night, deep into the night. So that was the way they kept themselves alert. So her other question is it okay to experiment with your practice in the course of a meditation, or do you need to stick strictly to the instructions? And I really encourage you to experiment. It's not just that it's okay, it's that it is part of the art of deepening meditation, is to learn how to follow the signals, because in the course of a practice, for instance, like the one we've been doing, the soft palate practice, some people have said that the energy flows up to the crown. Other people say that, you know, it flows up, it flows to the heart. So you're going to find that your attention is going to transform itself in the course of your meditation. And when this happens spontaneously, you should really try and just follow that, you know, follow it, let it happen. That's what I consider experimenting is actually following the signals of the Shakti and following the subtle nudges that come up in meditation. So we'll say more about that as we go along. But Deb, do you have some questions that have come in or?
I have not had any.
Okay,
so everybody's been really good.
Yeah, who would like to ask a question?
If we could, I'm going to ask Undina to unmute, but if you would like to ask questions, you should see at the bottom of your bar, you should see it says reactions. And if you want to just raise your hand, then that way I'll kind of be able to unmute you as we go. So,
okay.
So I think on Donna, yes, you're unmuted.
Hi.
Hi.
I emailed you about this question and I still am confused. And so I know it's a little, probably an annoying question to start with, but it's the soft palate. Where to put my tongue when I'm doing the ajna meditation. So I know there's the teeth and then there's a little mound behind the teeth. And so I'm putting it behind that little mound, sort of in the center of the roof of my mouth. Is that correct?
Is it comfortable?
Yeah. I've seen pictures online because I did this extensive research online. I was like, I'm not getting this right. So then I was putting it way back. It was literally curling my tongue back to near the opening of my throat where it felt softer, but that was not comfortable. It felt like a lot of efforting. So I've kind of gone back to the middle of my roof of my mouth.
Okay, Undina, so two things. First, when I suggested that you put your tongue back to find the soft palate, I meant that you should do it just to find the soft palate, not to keep your tongue there. And you can just let your tongue relax in the floor of your mouth. That's completely fine. Or another comfortable position that is often suggested is to put it right behind your teeth, more or less on top of that little ridge behind the teeth.
Oh.
So in other words, you're not straining the tongue in any way. You're really taking a position. The idea is to be have the tongue be comfortable so it can relax.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sorry for the confusion. I just gave that instruction as a way of helping you find the soft palate, which we can't always find with our mind.
Okay, so you don't ever meditate with the tongue curled all the way back?
I never do. I curl the tongue all, I mean, no. There are certain circumstances in which you would. There's that tongue curled all the way back, puts it in a position that's called Khechari Mudra. And it's a yogic exercise which supposedly allows you to open the passage between the roof of the mouth and the Ajna Chakra, and ultimately the Sahasrara. And yogis who are really serious about that will meditate for hours in that posture, sometimes even cutting the frenum that in order to make the tongue go back. I consider that a needless and painful austerity. The only time that I suggest that you curl your tongue back is when you're finding the nasal sound in a mantra. So the om sound, it's supposed to be om, and if you curl your tongue back, it'll make that nasal sound. It slightly closes the throat so that om sound is actually able to rise up into the head. But that's a particularly technical and specific placement of the tongue.
Oh, cool. I'll play with that. That sounds like fun. But thank you for clarifying.
Yes. Thank you for asking the question.
Sorry to ask it multiple times, but.
Okay. No. Ask till you get an answer. That's all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Karen?
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Sally. It's just so lovely, lovely, lovely to when you teach classes. It's like my world gets richer. But what's so interesting is my question is actually very similar to Andina's. And so you kind of answered part of it, which was, I was just very curious about energetically the difference between kachari, as you said it, mudra. But then I've noticed that there's times when I'm meditating, my tongue will be doing ujjayi mudra or something, and it'll go right behind my teeth. Yeah. Other times it sits at the bottom. Sometimes it goes behind, it presses between my bottom teeth, and then it kind of curls up. And I'm wondering, is there something energetically going on that causes the tongue to naturally do these different things? And is it something I should try and control? So it's kind of like what you just said to Andina, but maybe a little more.
Well, first of all, when the tongue makes these spontaneous mudras, they are mudras, just consider them yogic kriyas. In other words, the shakti is moving your tongue in particular ways at particular moments. You don't really have to figure it out. What is interesting when this happens is to ask yourself, just to notice, what is it? What do I feel when this happens? You know, does it help my concentration? And because if it does, if it's helping your concentration, it's, it's worth paying attention to. But generally, you place your tongue in the floor of the mouth or just behind the teeth. In Buddhist meditation, they'll often suggest or even instruct you to put the tip of your tongue right behind at the, the back of the teeth. But the point is, when you sit for meditation, your tongue should be relaxed. And yes, all sorts of stuff happens once the meditation current has taken over.
Thank you, Sally. And I think this is one of the things I love about studying with you is that you're training us to trust rather than get distracted in the meditation and go, oh, wait, my tongue isn't supposed to be there. Right. You're training us to go, oh, wait, my tongue went there.
Exactly. Exactly. Your tongue went there. Your head went back. It's not a problem. Sometimes it needs adjustment. You need to figure out how to work with it, but it's happening because it's doing something in your subtle system.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay. Lots of hands.
Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Sally. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for being here.
I spent years doing TM, which is an effortless practice. And you're not supposed to be doing anything in there. Right. And then I've been doing Kriya for a number of years now. And do you have some hints as to how to concentrate more fully? Because I seem to go in and then I find myself in thought. Go in and then I find myself in thought.
Yeah. Well, I understand. And most of us are ADD to some extent. I certainly am. The way that I was taught and continue to practice when the mind is very active, when there's a lot of thought, is to remember that the mind is Shakti. The mind is Prakriti in the language of the text we're using. So whatever is coming up, it's coming up inside the field of the mind, whose nature is Shakti, whose nature is to move. And I've found, I don't know if you've ever meditated with that bhavana, but I've found that when I do, when I remind myself, all these thoughts are simply made of Shakti, and then have that overall attitude in meditation, it seems to make it easier to concentrate, and it seems to make it less problematic when thoughts are coming up. But otherwise, just keep bringing your attention back to the focal point. It's sometimes, especially if if we have been doing a very relaxed practice, and I think many of us do, especially if you get into dhyana easily, you know, if the meditation current rises through your mantra practice or whatever it is that you've been doing, then we often get into the habit, and I'm sure this is true for many of you, it's been true for me over the years, you're just kind of, you know, floating on the currents of your meditation, going in and out. It's quite relaxing and peaceful and pleasurable. But you can go for years in that state, in that, you know, pleasant, relaxed state, and not really penetrate through the layer of thought, which is one of the reasons why I like teaching concentrative practice, because it, you know, it kind of trains us to be more focused. But it's really a practice. You just have to go, okay, thought, okay, soft palate, okay, Ajna Chakra, thought. And after a while, the mind just gets the idea. But that said, to me, the most, you know, this is why Tantric Shaivism is so powerful, even if you're working with another tradition, that to understand that the mind is a form of the goddess, that the mind is Shakti, that the mind is naturally creative, that the mind is to be honored, and that what your job is to honor her and kind of lead her gently in the direction that, you know, that you want to meditate, but not getting frustrated, not getting pissed off, not trying too hard, because it is the creative potency of your own mind that's doing this.
Great. Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Hey, Sally. Susan had asked to go back to where the tongue should be. She says, is the tongue fine resting behind top teeth instead of bottom?
Tongue's fine resting behind top teeth.
Okay.
So it's really a question of where the tongue feels relaxed.
Okay. All right. Rebecca, I'm asking you to unmute so you can ask your question.
Hello.
Hey, Sally, thank you so much. I'm really enjoying the class.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I had a question. I've been meditating for a few years, jumping around from different styles. But I find when I first start a new style, like I'm following just your meditations, I really feel the Shakti. But the longer I do the same meditation, I sort of lose the Shakti, or what I think of as the Shakti or the energy. And so I'm just wondering, am I focusing too hard or something? Or...
That is a good question. And I think my intuition about what you're asking is that we often get a lot of interest and attention when we first begin a practice. And as we become more accustomed to it, we become more, I don't want to use the word bored, but it becomes sort of more routine for us. And this is why experimenting with your practice is good. So for instance, with this practice, you know, there are three focal points that we're working with that tend to arise spontaneously in the course of a meditation session. So you'll start with the soft palate, allowing the awareness to rise, and then with the exhalation, it'll come down. Sometimes you'll be very much focused in the center of the head and the Ajna Chakra. Sometimes the movement down to the heart will be stronger. Sometimes you'll just find yourself in the heart. So what makes this practice alive and juicy is if you're really paying attention to what dhyana, how dhyana is shaping your consciousness. In other words, it's the dhyana, the opening into this dhyana state, which I don't want to call concentration, because it gives the wrong impression that it's a hard kind of focus. But when you go into dhyana, the the meditation card itself is going to be carrying you. And that, and you need to actually become quite aware of that. And that's what lets you stay with the practice. There will be a moment, I think this happens for many of you, especially for long-term meditators, when the focal point kind of dissolves and you're just there. You're just in a state of peace. The breath is moving. You're sort of inward. And when you get to that state, stay there, because that's where samadhi starts to happen. The concentrative practice will shift your consciousness inward in a particular way and open up, you know, the centers that we're working with. But as you know, when dharana segues into dhyana, it's kind of like anything can happen. So the point of this sort of meditation is not to stay rigidly focused, but to allow the focal point to carry you into this, you know, the deeper aspect, the deeper subtle body, the deeper causal body, which it will if you stay with it, but especially stay with the feeling sense of deeper opening that is going to occur as the dharana aspect of the process segues into the dhyana aspect, which is really a shift of awareness. And if you keep jumping around between one meditation and another, you're going to miss that moment of shift. So it's good to stay with the practice for a while, understanding that at some point it will morph. You will start getting into it, intimations about how your focus can deepen or widen. And you should, it's good to follow those, but not so much to follow those thoughts that come up of, oh, maybe I should switch to meditation on the heart, or maybe I should be working with a different mantra right now. Stick with what arises in the practice rather than what you think should arise. Is this clear? Is this helpful?
Yes, extremely. Thank you so much.
Okay, good. It's good. It's a subtle process, meditation.
Thank you.
Okay, Ruth.
Ruth.
Hi, Ruth. I have a question about kriyas and the awakening or activation of the chakras. I'm just kind of curious, as somebody who experiences a lot of the effects of our meditation practices in physical sensation, and kriyas are my best friend these days. I'm just wondering, kind of, how would you characterize the difference between the two? And then a follow-on question is, do the chakras move around at all in the body, or how much do they vary by each person's anatomy?
That second question is really interesting. Was the first question, what's the difference between kriyas and chakras?
It was more like, what's the difference between a kriya happening in the body and the experience of a chakra activating or awakening?
Well, okay. The word kriya actually applies to everything that happens in meditation.
Okay.
Physical, subtle, visionary, insight oriented. So they're all kriyas. So the physical kriyas are the ones that you experience so much, very much in the physical body.
Right. The bumps and the wiggles and the breezes.
Bumps and swaying and the, you know, the change in breathing, mm-hmm. The asana, the mudras that occur. Many of these mudras are actually intended to open chakras. For example, this one, which many, many people have, where the head goes back, it opens the throat chakra, but it also opens the heart chakra. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people have kriyas that are replicate yoga asanas that are actually intended to open some of the lower chakras. You know, for instance, if you find yourself making circles or, you know, doing pelvic swaying in meditation, which happens to a lot of people, this is working on the first and second and even third chakras. So yes, physical kriyas help to open the chakras. And in terms of whether they move around, it's not that they move around. It's that chakras are actually much larger than, you know, we're usually taught that the chakras is a little point, right?
Right, right.
So it's actually a zone. Okay. And it includes aspects of the nerves, of the nerve plexus. It includes organs. And, you know, if you're meditating deeply on a chakra and you start in the place where, you know, it appears on the chakra chart,
right,
that will, it may not be the place that will activate the chakra for you. Okay. So, you know, if what you're trying to do is really get a sense of, let's say, the third chakra, move your attention from the front, from the area of the navel, move it back into the inner body, move it back towards the spinal column. Feel that there's a sort of a larger circle, maybe about the size of my hand. Mm-hmm. And just move your attention around it until you find a point. There will be a place where there's like there's a sort of subtle aha. You have to be paying attention.
Right.
But there'll be a deeper sensation of the subtlety of this region. So you can work with chakras by moving your attention, but the chakra itself doesn't move.
Okay.
Even though the door to it in your body may be different than it is for somebody else.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, so Kathy Fletcher has a related question. Deb, you want to read it to us? On the chat.
So are you saying that the chakras are three-dimensional in the body?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, everything is three-dimensional in the body. You know, and for instance, generally speaking, we're taught that the ajna is here, like either between the eyebrows or above the eyebrows, and we tend to then place it on the forehead, but it is on the forehead, you know, it is in the front of the body, but it's also in the center of the head, you know. So if you just consider the ajna chakra to be in the front of the body, you're very, very likely to not feel it, to miss it. Whereas if you kind of recognize that it's actually your whole head, and your head, the sense of your head will, as it were, expand as you get deeper into meditation, if you allow it to, because, you know, the physical body is a part of the whole body system, which is much larger than the physical body. So in deep meditation, you're going to start feeling the body boundaries dissolving. It's a little scary sometimes when that happens early in your practice, but it's actually normal, natural, and an important part of meditation opening. And I notice with these particular meditations that we're doing that there does tend to be a natural expansion. You know, the sense of the body being boundaried by the skin and bones will tend to open, you know, so you'll recognize that your head is actually much bigger than your skull. So thanks for that.
Ellen, you're up next.
Hi, Ellen. So nice to see you.
I have wonderful memories of you as well from Ganeshpuri and Sri Mukta Nanda Ashram. And my question, I have been caretaking my older brother. We've been together since I was born 70 years ago. And he is a fellow seeker. He visited the ashram 3 times, I believe, and a seeker. In fact, he was one of my early teachers. So we have a very interesting karma together. But I'm finding that, you know, sickness does not bring out the best of us, and I'm not a natural caretaker. So it's very interesting to see the, you know, the energy between us and trying to find my way through it. And I just thought that I know that family is the best place to flush out our samskaras, and certainly siblings have a natural rivalry. And I can sense that sometimes there is a bit of a power struggle, you know, as the host and as the caretaker, I try to back off. But now that he's getting better, it's getting, you know, we're clashing more.
Yeah.
and I know that it isn't directly related to the Yoga Sutras, but I also know you probably could give me some advice in terms of how to hold myself and how to let go when I'm getting triggered like that.
I've always found that it's very helpful just to say to yourself, I'm triggered. And if you can, say it out loud to your brother. You know, in other words, process it. You know, cop to it, admit it. have the, you know, talk about it. I mean, he's a seeker. He's a conscious person. I know that these are difficult, especially if one of you prefers not to have conflict. But it actually, it's part of what lets you process the karma that's being worked out between you.
I'm particularly triggered when he knows I'm a seeker and on the path. And when he reproaches me for you know, being triggered.
You mean you're supposed to be a spiritual person. You're not supposed to lose it. So, well, you know, he's wrong about that. So, you know, make a joke of it. You know, just say, I know I'm supposed to be a, you know, enlightened person and I'm not supposed to lose my temper, but hey, I'm a human being. and the other thing is, sorry.
That's the only thing I've come up with is trying to find a way to maintain a sense of humor about it. But that's not a city that I'm very good at.
Well, this is your opportunity. You know, when I was taking care of my father, who was in a lot of pain, we would have these moments when something incredibly undignified would happen. I'm not going to do TMI and tell you the kind of thing that would happen. But my reaction always was to burst out laughing. And I realized it was nervous laughter. But after a while, it just became a kind of gallows humor that we would experience together. And it somehow, maybe it's an opportunity for you guys to take life less seriously. Also, you know, just offer it. It's always helpful to offer those, you know, I'm triggered. Thank you, Goddess. Thank you, God, please. I offer this. And show me what I need to learn or whatever it is that you want. But, you know, that's a pretty powerful intervention to do for yourself, no matter what.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Sally. Thank you so much for doing this. It's such a privilege to have access to you and to meditate with you being our guide. It's been great. And I took the first two classes last year, and it really kind of startled my meditations into something much more vivid for me. And there was a class in the fall, I guess. It was a meditation where you were taking us through he had us close our eyes a couple of times, and you helped me identify just kind of where awareness is by at one point you said, just say Namah Shivaya. And when it's over, that's where
focus in the space. Yeah,
that's where we are. And then at another point, you had us closing our eyes and just talking about that field of scintillating. Just for me, it's kind of just gray light that's just always there, even in pitch black. And you were talking about that night about a visualizing a being behind our heart. And we were breathing and watching that. And I was stoned, just stoned, while you were talking. And then at one point you said, and you know, in that field, and you were talking about something that I think that's about as big as our subtle body, you said, you can make a little hole in that. you can make a little hole. And if you go through that hole, you can fill the universe. You said something to that effect. And I found myself going, okay, make a hole, make a hole, make a hole. Or, you know, however I was trying to, there was just something in me, in my conceptual mind that was saying, that's not something you can do.
Right.
But I wanted to see if there's any way for you to elaborate on what you meant there, or if, I just don't know. It just, it felt like an accept to me. It's like, I want to go there. I want to do that. Like,
yeah, I totally get it. And you know, we actually did a version of this practice last week in the class, and the point of it, the purpose of it, is to allow us to recognize that field of gray with points of light in it, or whatever color you see it in, that this is the limited feeling of it is actually an aspect of our having bound ourselves to our individual idea that we're just this big. No, you're this big physically, and you're, you know, maybe this big energetically. So that this practice of creating a hole or an opening is, it's actually a method that I found that was very powerful for me, of just getting through that wall and into what we could call the wider field, or the field of the wider mind, the field of Shakti, the field of Prakriti. And that one way you can do this is to have the feeling of expanding your mind, you know, actually imagining that the area around you is expanding. Another way you can do it is to ask yourself, or to say something like, may I be aware of the wider field in which I exist? So there are many ways to kind of expand your sense of what's there. In terms of the making a hole, if you close your eyes, any of you, you're all invited to do that if you want to. Close your eyes, look into what you see with your eyes closed, and it's no big deal. It's, you know, maybe it includes the blood vessels behind your eyelids. And just imagine that instead of being an opaque, that this field kind of softens, and feel that your attention actually moves deeper into it. You know, it's the problem we have is that we unconsciously try to take our body through that softening. So it's not your body, it's your attention. Just, you know, you're just taking, you're breaking through the limitation that we place on our attention by having the feeling that the field in front of your eyes is softening. And just see if you can allow attention to flow more deeply forward or backward or to one side, almost as though your attention is sailing through the ocean of your own mind. And don't stop. In other words, let your attention keep flowing. And just periodically notice where you are. And if you feel stopped, and this is very hard to describe, but it's something that you experience in meditation, let your attention become the field, or be eaten by the field, as it were, be swallowed by the field. So essentially what you're doing is enlarging your sense of self, enlarging your sense of mind. And eventually what happens as you do this practice this way is that citta kind of merges into Prakriti or into the Shakti of the wider mind. It takes a while. But so how was that?
That easier? I ask myself if I'm imagining it a little bit, but then while you were talking, I did feel that everything got kind of creamier and subtler.
Yeah.
It felt more like consciousness, but I still have this, there's like a bungee cord,
yeah,
you know, tether.
Yeah, well, we all have that. One way to deal with it is to just, when you feel that happening, breathe and say to yourself, let go on the exhalation. And, you know, and just make the decision that you're going to keep on letting your attention merge into the field more and more and more. And when you're pulled back, just go forth again.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
That it feels like there's no more concentrating on breath or mantra.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah, you're just in the mind field. I mean, you can concentrate on breath or mantra. You might find the mantra is helpful or the breath is helpful, but actually the practice is to enter the chitta, to fully enter the chitta as an energetic field.
Great.
I gave it to you as a meditation at the end of class. The most skillful way to do this practice on your own is towards the end of meditation, when you're actually quite inside, you know, you've taken yourself through the initial stages of working with thoughts. You're kind of more centered, and that's when the chitta has softened on its own, and you're able to more easily meditate on mind itself. That's actually what we're doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And based on the understanding that chitta is an aspect of Prakriti, which is an aspect of Shakti, and if you just let it be, chitta will expand and you'll recognize that you are part of that which is the source of whatever is. Takes a little while, but it's a direct path practice, like meditation on awareness, but it's a Shakti oriented practice. Does that make sense? You know, it's
yes.
A way of understanding that your mind is Shakti, your mind is Prakriti. And because Prakriti includes everything, it allows the possibility of expansion and inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for asking the question, Chris.
Hey, Sally. I'm just unmuting Laura because she has a question about self-healing or related to that technique.
Okay. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Sally. So I'm wondering if it's this, I learned something. I just broke my foot the other day. And interestingly, in the process, that meditation we just did,
mm-hmm.
I did sort of a reverse of that and brought it inside the body to touch the injury, and it was quite effective. And I'm assuming it's the same field. I just feel like there, if you reverse the direction and invite it in,
yeah,
then it has a very powerful ability to handle extreme crises in the body even.
Yes, it does. And
it's the same field. Yes,
it's the same field. It's, you know, in other words, you're bringing the power of Prakriti, which being the source can change circumstances.
Yeah.
Including circumstances in the body.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes just focusing on that part of the body and feeling the discomfort in it or the pain in it or whatever, entering the feeling and letting it expand is going to bring that power into the injury.
Okay. Thank you. I like the meditation technique.
Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome. I'm glad.
All right. Dawn, you're next.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. So great to be here with everybody. Can you hear me?
Sure. Yes. Can.
Okay, great. So I have two questions. One's technical and one's more Well, I'll just ask the question. So when you talk about the morphing of your meditation, and we've talked about that screen that you can connect to right in front of your awareness within the chit or within your meditation, I'm having a hard time deciding if I'm actually going into vikalpa or smriti, you know, imagination or memory, because oftentimes I'll be in a deep meditation and the thinking or the thoughts are like behind, they're there, but they're not capturing my attention. Like they come and go, but there's this awareness, this screen. And then sometimes there's a snap and then a vision comes in like really clearly, as if I'm watching a screen, watching a TV show, and I'm aware. It's almost like lucid dreaming.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to put words to it. Like I saw an avalanche the other day. It was very clear. And I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. And I don't know if it's memory or if it's am I being lazy and I'm in imagination and fantasy, but it does feel like it's happening whether I want to or not. And I have to be very aware, like, okay, this is happening. Just flow with it. And sometimes it's faster and sometimes it's slow. So I'm like, is that vikalpa, smriti, or is it sometimes a vision or someone else's memory I've been in contact with? And I think that's happened once.
Remember we were talking last week about the tanmatras, the subtle elements that are, you know, that are what we, you know, when your eyes are closed, when you're in a deep state or when you're dreaming, you see things or you hear things, or you sometimes even smell things. That's more unusual. And, you know, very often we feel things. There's like inner sensation. So these are experiences of the tanmatras, which are part of the subtle body, and they include subtle senses. So they are normal experiences that occur as you go inside. And they're not, I mean, yes, we, you know, the imagination draws on the tanmatras, but if you're having spontaneous visions or images come up in meditation, the chances are that you're simply having experiences of your subtle world. Wherever they may, you know, just as dreams will often draw on experiences you've had during the day, but nonetheless are being experienced within. In the same way, some of the images that you see in meditation may be memory. They may be imagination. They may be reminders of imaginative practices you've done in the past. But in the moment, you know, they are actually the display of the subtle elements and senses that we have access to. So they're signs that your meditation is going deeper. And you don't have to think about it. You know, if it's something that seems interesting that you want to contemplate, you know, do it after meditation, but let these things just occur as they occur.
Yes, thank you. That's what, and then I just journal. Sometimes I get insight.
And it's very interesting to read, you know, to go back and read them, because often you will discover in hindsight that it had something to do with something that, you know, you need to pay attention to. But it'll wreck your meditation if you start trying to figure it out while you're meditating.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just let it go and then journal after. And then the more technical question I have is, in doing the Agna chakra, going through the talu up, sometimes because we're connecting to the heart, so as that morphs as well, it's just a more technical term. Can you bring it all the way? Well, I'm asking, I'm sure you can. We can do anything, as you said, you want to explore, but for this practice that we're trying, sometimes I bring it all the way up the Shushumna Navi through the Talu. Like it just starts happening that way.
Yeah.
And that's okay, right? Or would you prefer learning? Fine. Okay.
No, it's fine. It's going to be what it's going to be. I would really, you know, I think it's important that you follow the instructions until meditation starts happening. And then, yes, you know, especially because if you study with me, we do a lot of vertical practice, you know, so there might just be a natural turning towards the vertical, and that's completely fine. It's We're exploring the geography of the inner body, which is tremendously helpful and valuable. And yet the point of meditation is not, it's not to get to know that particular part of the body. It's really to allow the expansion of your consciousness.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you, Don.
All right, Bari.
Bari, hi.
Hi. Okay, I should probably know this, but I'm totally confused between Dharana and Dhyana.
Dhyana.
The probably is very simple, but it also seems very complex. So if you could help me. And maybe this is what the whole class is about.
Yeah, this is kind of what the whole class is about. So, you know, so one of the things that the Yoga Sutra does is it breaks down the meditation process into steps and stages, which is one of the reasons I think we find it so valuable. So Dharana is the activity of a focusing. And in my experience, when you sit down, when you sit for meditation, most of us tend to be outgoing, even if it's first thing in the morning. So what Dharana does is gather the scattered rays of your attention and bring them to a point. And normally, as Jeff said, you know, Jeff asked earlier, thoughts will come up, images will come up, you'll get distracted over and over and over again, and you use the process of Dharana. Dharana just basically means focusing, to come back. And at a certain point, now, the Yoga Sutra commentary that I've studied over the years say that the difference between Dharana and Dhyana is that instead of having 86 thoughts in a minute, you're having only 30 thoughts. In other words, when the thoughts start to die down, you're in Dhyana. And then when the thoughts die down altogether, the traditional texts say you're in Samadhi. My experience of Dhyana, because in Tantra, we practice grace-based meditation. Is that a grace-based kriya? So at a certain point, you know, what I call the meditation current just arises and starts to suck you in, as it were, to pull you in. And so there's a deeper sense of focus, but it's often more that you're just more interiorized, and thoughts die down, or as Dawn was saying, thoughts are there, but they're sort of, they're not, your attention doesn't go to them. You know, we often say you thoughts might be there throughout the whole process. But it's Dharana when you're having to refocus. It's Dhyana when the thoughts may be there, but they're not taking you out. It's Samadhi when the thoughts are irrelevant.
Thank you
for the question.
Yeah.
All right, Sushila.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, we can.
Okay. You touched a bit about using samyama to approach chronic illnesses, and I wonder if you could expand on that.
Yes. I'm trying to remember what I said about it last week. Samyama is the way we use our meditative skills to focus in a way that expands our capacity for healing. So in a, you know, what Lara was talking about of bringing that space of awareness into a wound, into an injury, is an example of using samyama. You know, you use your ability to concentrate on a subtle object, and you bring it into the part of your body that's hurting. You know, for instance, if you have bronchitis, which is I'm suffering from at the moment, whether it's, you know, it's acute or chronic, what you would do is you would bring your attention into the lungs, you would feel the feeling, And then you would perhaps imagine the energy around it softening and entering the discomfort. Or you would bring a healing color into it, or you would bring the mantra into it with the intent of healing. So it's, in other words, you bring meditative, soft meditative focus to the issue and use your imagination or your intelligence to, one of the things you can do is kind of unpick the contraction. In other words, create space in the contraction. You can bring a kind of a healing feeling to the contraction. You can expand it. You can put your mantra into it. But it's your ability to focus on the discomfort and to feel the different aspects of it that actually draws on the natural normal healing capacity that every one of us carries within property. So in other words, samyama, that is the ability to bring strong meditative focus to an issue, physical issue, to a problem, to a question, is what begins to trigger that space within you, which has answers, which is innately healing, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I meant.
So you would wait until you are deeper into meditation before.
Yeah. Or you would spend a few minutes coming deeper into meditation. You know, if you want to work on it, you know, you would spend some time bringing your awareness more and more deeply, focused and inward, and then apply it.
Great, I can work with that. Thank you.
Oh, good. I hope. Well, let us know how you're doing. Yes.
Maria.
Hi, Maria. You have to unmute yourself.
There you go.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. So I've been really loving these meditations. I'm feeling this sense of expansiveness and like this connection to my bigger, the Atman, my larger self, a sense of that. And beautiful. The small self is just like, it's going on for a couple of days. And I've never felt that. Like, I always feel like for me, it's because I've been through a particularly difficult period that this is helping me sort of segue out. And I don't know what. No, it is. I'm happy, but it's more, then I'll lose the current, you know what I mean? And then I'll want to reconnect in meditation. Mm-hmm. Today I had, a deepening of a meditation where it just, I kind of made myself sit longer, and then it just sort of went up into my head, the energy, and I could feel it. And then there was I was wearing something over my eyes, and there was that luminosity, almost like the stars were a little bit, coming into my vision. And that field, it was the field that I was connecting to. And then I felt really that burst of energy. I'm kind of losing my train of thought here. I have my notes, but so that process went deeper. But then when I came out of the meditation, I felt a little bit sad, like I wasn't in that, even though I had that wonderful meditation. And so I understand that this is all part of, a process. It's not going to always be a continuum, because that's the way the chitta works. But
that's the way grace works. It's the way Shakti works.
Yes.
Yeah. It's always different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I felt Shakti like really intensely too. Like it was that, that energy of just kind of like bursting up. But so my question really is just, Well, it's just the thankfulness, first of all, for this and having this opportunity and feeling connecting to something that I've been searching for one thing. And is it something in particular about these meditations between the head and the heart? Because I've been so focused on the heart, and now it's like, as soon as I started doing these meditations, it was just kind of like this, I was meditating, like I was really, you know, in it and the current, and it's everything that you're talking about. And so, but the way that it kind of stays with me, is that something that will come and go, or is that something that I will eventually build on?
Eventually, it'll be pretty much, all other things being equal, it'll be pretty much 24/7. That takes a while.
Yes.
And if you're very busy, you know, or if there's something on your mind, and it's, one of the things is when, you know, it's easier to hold that state on days when you don't have a lot going on.
Right.
You know, because, so it, one of the reasons that it changes is because you get really busy, or you have an appointment that you have to prepare for, or somehow your mind is going to your daily activities.
Yes.
And so that's why it's normal and natural for meditation to disappear. And you don't really want to try and make it stay, because but eventually it's really a question. We've been talking about it in class, about how the samskaras of meditation begin to expand, so that even in, you know, in the post-meditative state called vyutana, we're still experiencing it. And that's part of how you measure progress over years. It's not necessarily so apparent in the short term, but you know, I find I look back at myself and I realize that it's not that I would say I'm in a permanent state of meditation, but the meditation current is always going on, always available. And that's the result of a lot of years of,
like, you can plug into it in a way.
And you can plug into it. You can plug into it
in your waking moment.
Like, yeah, you can plug into it anytime.
Right.
And that's, it sounds like that's starting to happen with you. And, you know, and one of the ways to work with it, this is for everybody, is when you feel, you know, a movement of the Shakti, or when you feel a pull to go with it, you know, take 3 minutes and tune inside, turn inside.
Right.
And that'll make the state of experiencing dhyana and vyutana, as they say in the sutras, a little bit more apparent. And it's a way to do open-eyed practice with meditation that will eventually.
Yeah, I feel like I need to do more.
Yeah.
It's
important. Just,
yeah.
And it makes life very juicy.
Well, it's almost like, you know, which path, you know, it's like, do you want to kind of like, I feel like there's like these two parallel things, you know, going on, you know.
Yes.
Now,
it's the sutras are very smart about this. The outgoing mind and the incoming mind, they both have their own samskaras.
And right.
The outgoing samskaras are very powerful. You know, we've been cultivating them for lifetimes.
Yes.
But the ingoing samskaras actually have more innate power. So the more you cultivate them, the stronger they become. Eventually they become stronger than the outgoing ones.
So they affect the outgoing.
Yeah, they affect the outgoing.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. Thank you for everything. This is great.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Sally, Dawn asked how you spell vyutana.
V-Y-U, I'll put it in the chat box.
Okay, thank you.
It went to you.
I'll get it out to everybody. There we go.
There's another T.
Oh, is there? It's okay.
V-Y-U-T-T-H-A-N-A.
Okay, V-Y-U-T-T-H-A-N-A. Okay. All right. So we had a question from Michelle. It's about meditation during dreaming. She says she has a Fitbit that tells her approximately what REM, deep sleep, and restorative sleep is like. along with heart and breathing rate. In the past month, her REM and deep sleep state have gone down, but restorative is higher. And she said, would that be equivalent to meditation, or am I just getting some really deep healing sleep?
You know, I don't know, but my feeling is that meditation, that, you know, that your meditation practice is affecting your sleep. So I believe that the definition of restorative sleep is that that's the best sleep. At least that's what my Ayurvedic doctor says. So it sounds like a good thing.
Sarasati says, is Vatana the state following Dana or following Samadhi?
Vatana is the state of being out of meditation. So Vatana is the direct post-meditation state. So if you've been in Dhyana or in Samadhi and you come out of it, that's Vatana. It's a technical term that refers to, well, it actually can refer both to your normal waking state. But more, you know, the way it seems to be used in the sutras and the way I'm using it is that it's the experience when you're sitting for meditation that you come out of your focal point, you come out of your experience of being immersed, thoughts start to come up. For most people, meditative states, dhyana, dharana, and dhyana and samadhi, will last for a certain amount of time, and then you'll come out, and then you can go back in. So a lot of the art of meditation is balancing the vyutana state with your meditative state, learning how to accept that you're going to come out of meditation and that you can go back in. It's in Tibetan Buddhism, it's called post-meditation. In the Dzogchen tradition in Tibetan Buddhism, as many of you know, it's said that you'll be in the state of true meditation for like 2 minutes, and then you'll come out, you'll come into Vyutana, and then what you do when you recognize you're in Vyutana is that you refocus. So, and this is how you cultivate the deeper states, is letting yourself come out and then going back, letting yourself come out, going back. And this way, the samskaras of returning to dhyana or returning to samadhi become stronger and stronger, and it becomes easier and easier to do it. And, you know, when we're first starting to meditate and when we come out during, you know, when you're deep inside and suddenly thoughts come up or your body jerks or you're out, then our tendency is to think, okay, I'm out, I've blown it, I've lost it, I'm gonna get up. So you don't get up. You sit there for the amount of time that you've agreed with yourself you're going to meditate. And when you come out into Vyutana, you go back into Dhyana. And Vyutana also refers to the post-meditation state when you've gotten up and you're walking around that Maria was talking about. So you can do the same thing in your waking state, cultivating an indrawn awareness in your waking state in Vyutana.
Sarasati asks, is going back into the meditation, is that a result of grace?
No, it's the result. Well, it's, grace helps, but it's also the result of practice.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. You know, you just learn how to do it. Meditate, you know, when they say meditation teaches you meditation, or yoga teaches you yoga, by practicing to go back into dharana or dhyana, you're allowing meditation to show you how to do it.
All right, next question, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi.
It's good to see you, Sally. It's good to see everybody's face. I love it so much.
It really is.
It's like such an instant connection. I had a question about the experience I've been having since we've been studying the Yoga Sutras, which has been a very different experience for me than my normal meditation that that we've been doing. Mm-hmm. Especially when I meditate on the soft palate, I get a very strong urge, like a heaviness in the back of my skull. Uh-huh. And I mean, it's like, if I weren't leaning against something, it feels like getting pulled back. Yeah. And kind of a little bit what Chris was talking about and Laura mentioning about the pinhole or like the bungee cord or something, it's feeling like that. And sometimes if I'm sitting on the floor and doing a meditation, it's like, all I want to do is fold over. I just want to, and
fold forward or fold backward, fold forward.
If I'm on the floor,
yeah,
I want to counteract it by folding forward. And sometimes that just, it's like a darkness, but not necessarily bad, but it's just different. I'm used to expansion and like bliss and all of this. And this other thing, I just don't know what it is. And I know I've been through a lot and I've been working through a lot of samskaras and figuring out what life looks like now as much as you can during a pandemic. But it's scarier than I'm used to.
Well, first of all, Jennifer, these are physical kriyas. And that this, you know, when you go backward, it if you notice what it's doing is expands the chest. If you let it, so it just makes more space in your upper torso, which especially if you're grieving, you know, the lungs get contracted, the chest gets contracted. So, you know, my sense is that this is partly a therapeutic kriya. Mm-hmm. It's really good to, I think I mentioned this in one of the classes. It's very good if you're having, if you're flowing backwards to support yourself, because it can get kind of uncomfortable, especially support your head.
I've been sitting against a wall.
I ended up getting a meditation chair that has a headrest so that when this happens, which it does for me quite often, I'm just the head is supported. Its main thing is to support your head. That forward flowing kriya is Mahamudra. It's actually a powerful hatha yoga asana, and it opens the muladhara. It's a kundalini raising practice. And I would say part of the darkness is because in that posture it doesn't give you such a sense of expansion as mm-hmm. meditation, the head and the heart do. It's often said that when you experience that darkness, you're experiencing the causal body or the deep sleep body, and which is, you know, the body of deep rest. I think that's probably true, but in this particular movement, in that fold forward movement, it's almost like you go to sleep. You know,
it's peaceful.
It's peaceful.
Exactly. I mean, I don't feel afraid.
Right.
It's just.
Yeah. It's an entrance into a sleep state, and it's restful. It's restorative. And there are going to be times when that's what wants to happen. So my theory, my belief in meditation, which is what my guru trained me to see and experience, is that it's important to let it happen. And there'll be a point, especially in that fold forward thing, where it starts to feel dull, and you know, you'll wanna feel more alert, and then sit up. There'll be, you know, so come back to your normal posture. If the Shakti wants you to be in that posture, it's going to push you into it, whether you resist or not. There are times when you just get the signal to just come back to your normal position, and you should do that if you want to, but don't fight the movement.
Okay. So the one going backwards, though, that's the one that can get overwhelming.
Yeah.
And do you think that's just the opening to?
I think it's the
opening to more.
Yeah, I think it's opening. I think that we're not used to being that. You know, this gesture is like, bring it on. You know, it's like, whatever you've got, universe, I'm open to it. You know, it's a very, very, it's a gesture of complete receptivity. And
it feels almost liberating, but that like
it's unstable.
Like, I want to be free, but like, can I handle it?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Can you handle the aliveness? I really don't know.
Well, that's the thing, exactly. And some of you are smiling. But yes, that's it. It's challenging to recognize how open you can be. Absolutely. So, and the posture itself will teach you. You know, I mean, so okay, what is it to be receptive? What is it to be open? What is it to be free?
Okay.
Let me tiptoe into it a little bit at a time, you know, and this meditation posture where you're safe, you're protected, you know, you have a support. It lets you practice it.
Okay. So maybe the forward fold is me like, okay, that's enough for now and just rest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Love.
Love.
All right. Vivi?
So let me just say, we're supposed to end at 12:15, but let's take, I'll take the remaining questions. And if you need to leave, we love you and bid you goodbye. So Vivi, hi. Lovely
Hello.
To be with us.
Hi, Sally. Hi, Sangha from the whole world, United States and Europe and Asia and the whole world. Wonderful that we're all together here. And I just wanted to express my joy, my absolute joy with this course, as with every course that we've taken together. But it's kind of like for us who've been trying to explore this path for years, it's kind of like being in Shangri-La. Because we've been studying the Yoga Sutras for so many years and different books and different interpretations, but kind of like from a theoretical point of view. And, you know, Nancy and I here in Greece, we've been studying together and sharing the path, and we've been teaching yoga courses and teacher trainings and always trying to explore and understand. And remember on the first course we did together, I asked one of my first questions in writing, what is the difference between Vitarka Samadhi and Vichara and this and that? And it is now it's kind of like being in an amusement park and being like a kid and getting to try all these different techniques and knowing firsthand the excitement of being there in the wheel.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's I just feel very joyful and gratitude at the opportunity to just taste, you know. And in a way, it's simple, okay? It's like, this is the samadhi where you focus on something, and this is when you stay a little longer. And just meditating this morning, I've experienced this, like, no limitation of body, of skin, of form, to just, and it's like, it's such an amazing opportunity to be able to have that, way of approaching it. And also because I've been meditating with my Zen Sangha for like 30 years now, and it's a whole different approach to that. Like in Zen, it's just about being in the moment, just kind of like, just being in the moment. And it's a noble practice. It's a beautiful practice. It's kind of like being a tree,
right?
And grounded. And with these tantric meditations, going inside the tree, going and feeling what it is to be inside the trunk, inside the leaves, inside the blossoms, like inside the roots. And is how lucky are we in this age?
Yeah.
Yeah, to be able to explore that.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's true. And of course, the practice that we've done over the years really helps that exploration go deeper. So it's beautiful. And thank you for being with us with all your years of practice and awareness and study. And
Sally, you're such a wealth of love, compassion, and skillful means. If I may say just a couple more minutes, I'll take over a discussion with the rest of the group. In our Zen practice now, our Zoom practice for the 3 weeks, we're studying the Lotus Sutra, and there's a whole chapter dedicated to skillful means. So in a way, I think what you're doing with us is skillful means, which is the different ways of leading us to a personal journey and talking to each one of our questions in a skillful way so that, okay, we get it. We are there.
Yeah. Method is really, really helpful, especially a good time-tested, enlightened beings-tested method. It's really amazingly helpful. And every tradition has its own, you know, the place where the thing it does better than anybody else. Zen really does just sitting better than anybody else. Tantra does working within the different layers of the human better than anybody else. So it's great to combine them. So thank you, Vivi.
Thank you.
I'm glad you were able to be here at this time.
Thank you for your love and your generosity. And also, it's just beautiful to see our whole Sangha here in Zoom.
I know, it's really great.
How the world is transforming, and nice to see everyone. I wish the best to all of you.
Thank you. Yes.
Danielle,
hi. You have, yeah.
Hi. Can you hear me okay? Because yes. I think
you're good.
Network is low.
You're good.
My question is about actually.
Yep, we've lost your connection.
You want to put it on the chat box, Danielle?
I'll try and put it on the chat box.
Okay. All right.
You know what?
Here you are. You're good.
Okay. Try it again.
Am I good now?
Yes.
Okay. I'll try again quickly. So my question is more about the post-meditative state, and specifically since we started this course, essentially after a night meditation, I wake up very with very things, awaking from a dream, but it's not so much the dream, strong sensations of
Danielle. You're blurping out. Maybe
perhaps
put it in the chat session.
In the chat, and we'll take Phyllis.
And we'll come back.
Yes. And come back to you.
We'll come back to you.
Take a minute to put it in the chat. Hi, Phyllis. Hey, Deb's unmuting you.
She said, there you go.
No, she's still muted.
Yeah, I'm asking her to unmute. Oh, there you go.
There we go. Hi, Sally. Hi, everyone. Wow. This is just amazing. I'm so stoked by hearing Vivi talk. I don't know. And to see Jennifer and, oh my gosh, all of you. But my question my comment, or I guess it's a question. I love the wormhole technique of, you know, finding our floating through the wormhole, through the field. But given my devotional tendency, I want to turn this into the devotional practice. And the way I've thought of doing it is, well, one way is you told us that story about the man who kept coming against a wall and he worshipped. Someone told them. Did you tell him
to worship? No, he figured it out.
He figured it out on his own. So it would be like in that field when I'm trying to find my way through, I would probably worship the field.
Yeah.
I would probably love the field.
Yes.
And possibly even ask for help and tell the field I love her.
Yes. And that's, and I would do the same thing. It's like, if you see the field of your own mind as an aspect of goddess, mm-hmm. and if you have a devotional quality, mm-hmm. as you do, then it's one of the laws of life that the more loving you're able to be, the more responsive the world is. So it's actually, if you have a natural devotional bent, then mm-hmm. it actually helps open every aspect of meditation.
Right.
It's very helpful. So good to cultivate devotion. I'm about to give a course on devotion. I think I'm going to
Yay.
Bhakti and I've always avoided it because it's a hard topic for Westerners often. Wow. But I think it's I think you all advanced enough for devotion.
Well, it's hard not to be in the field of love with you, Sal, when you're the teacher. Everyone knows. All right. Thank you.
Danielle's gonna wait and post to the discussion list because she said okay. It's too in depth to get into.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I look forward to seeing your question and all of you. It's so great to be with you in this way. So thank you so much for showing up on Sunday morning, and thank you, Deb, so much for running this class for us. And we'll see you on Wednesday. Have a fantastic week and just so much love to all of you. So namaste.